Low silver prices force a Yukon mine to shut for the winter, and Sitka sees a booming stock of sockeye. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. Alexco Resource Corporation will close its Belkino mine in Yukon this winter because of low silver prices. About 100 employees will be affected by the September shutdown. A press release from the company says it will reopen in spring 2014, assuming the silver market has improved. The company says silver prices are now so low that operation costs exceed revenues at the Belkino mine. Rob McIntyre, president of the Yukon Chamber of Mines, told the CBC the winter shutdown will allow the company time to develop a more efficient production plan. Alexco has been shipping lead and zinc from the Belkino mine at Keno since 2010 through Alaska Marine Lines. The Skagway News reported in 2011 that Alexco shipped more than 24 million pounds of minerals out of Skagway that year. Skagway Mayor Stan Selmer said the winter closure will not directly affect the town. No Skagway positions at Alaska Marine Lines will be lost because of the reduction of shipping. Skagway is also the port of export for ore from the Capstone Minto mine, which has not announced any changes in production. And a new magnetite project with Eagle Industrial Mineral Corporation is expected to come online in the coming months and is expected to ship through Skagway. But Alexco needs a turnaround in silver prices before it can ramp up production again. Clint Newman, CEO of Alexco Resources, said in June, when the company announced layoffs, that the downturn in prices have also been affected by a decrease in investment demand. He predicted that industrial demands for silver also needs to increase for a turnaround.
So silver is an industrial metal. It's widely used in high-tech industries, as conductors. It has a lot of other pharmaceutical type uses, and I think as the global economy begins to recover and picks up speed, then the industrial consumption of silver is going to expand, as is lead and zinc, two other products that we produce. So I think that we may see some pressure on the consumption side from industrial consumption, and that also will help the future price of these metals.
The community of Keno City is also concerned about the shutdown of winter operations at the mine. The 30 residents there say the mine and its employees are the town's main source of revenue and commerce. While the sockeye returns for the Chilkoot are low, and they are all right for Chilkat, Readout Lake near Sitka is having a banner year. The U.S. Forest Service, which manages the weir at Readout, reports almost 22,000 fish have returned to freshwater so far, and the run is not expected to peak for another week or two. Biologists project that the total run this year could reach 80,000. Two commercial seine openings have been held, and more are likely. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Chris Leesburg is the district wildlife biologist in Sitka. He oversees the Readout Lake Fertilization Project. Readout Lake is an unusual body of water.
The top one-third of the lake is freshwater, and the bottom two-thirds is saltwater.
This happens because saltwater is denser than freshwater. The technical term for a lake like Readout is meromitic. In some meromitic systems, the different layers of water might mix at times, but not so at Readout. The freshwater lens at the top of the lake supports the reproductive cycle of the sockeye. The bottom of the lake is a sort of no man's land.
They come back, they spawn, they die. Their carcasses provide this great nutrients. Well, we're losing a lot of it to the bottom of the lake. It gets into this anoxic saltwater environment and we lose it.
As a result, the Readout Lake sockeye system is deceptively small given the overall size of the lake. Leesburg says the optimum capacity for Readout is from 7,000 to 25,000 returning fish. Anything more does not really contribute to larger runs. So this year, with a projected return of 80,000 fish, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has already held two commercial seine openings. Leesburg says commercial fisheries are written into the sockeye management plan created by the state, the Forest Service, and other stakeholders over 10 years ago.
When we get a year like this, we have options to open up to more fish for subsistence fishermen and potentially for commercial fisheries as well. And right now we're 80,000 plus fish. It's a good year to open up for commercial fishermen.
The subsistence bag limit has also been raised this year to 25 fish per day or 100 per household for the season. Additionally, the Forest Service has, for the second year in a row, issued an emergency order banning dogs from coming ashore within a half mile of the falls. The six Forest Service employees working on the weir have established a strict bear hazing protocol. Loose dogs upset that discipline and can antagonize bears. Leesburg says the weir crew has, over the course of several years, trained the redout bear population to respect air horns.
So when you're out there dip netting or fishing or whatever, and you hear air horns, it's one of two things. It's our crew coming to the weir, so we blow air horns to notify the bears that we're coming to the weir. It is our time to be on the weir. We're trying to be the dominant species out there at that point. I don't want my crew out there working with bears 5-10 yards away, so we have this, you know, blow the air horn. And also, when we're on the weir, and if a bear does pop out, we blow air horns, shoot them in a rump with a rubber slug, and blow the air horns again. And that does the trick.
And the trick for fishermen, says Leesburg, is to take advantage of this pattern.
Bring an air horn with you. The bears out there, they see the air horn and they get scared because they associate it with a rubber slug to the rump, which is not very pleasant for them.
One wild card in the redout formula this year is the massive landslide in May, which blocked the inlet stream, prime spawning ground for sockeye. A 55-acre lake has formed behind the slide. Leesburg says this is not necessarily bad news for fish. He says the downed old-growth timber resembles a huge beaver dam.
There's a lot of fear from people who really don't understand how fish migrate, that beaver dams can create migration barriers. And in a lot of cases, that's not true. In fact, the beaver dams can create great fish habitat, and fish will find their way through them, even big fish. And I think that's going to be the case with this slide.
A Forest Service team will conduct surveys of spawning activity in the lake to confirm this idea. Leesburg says state wildlife troopers have been more active at readout than in past years, and several people have already been cited for failing to obtain their free subsistence permits at the local ADF&G office. He also doesn't think fishermen need to be overly competitive looking for good spots on the falls. Leesburg says he's no expert dip netter by any means, but there are so many fish around that he's managed to get a few anyway. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
One of the most controversial bills passed by the Alaska legislature this year was HB 80, a bill that eased a number of cruise ship wastewater regulations. A representative from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation talked with local business leaders in Ketchikan this week, and she outlined how the department believes that this year's changes to cruise ship wastewater dumping rules are not as harmful as some had feared. KRBD's Sean Carlson has this story.
My staff and I care deeply about the environment. We live here, we fish here, we recreate here. So we have a vested interest ourselves in protecting the water in Alaska.
Michelle Bonnet-Hale, director of the Water Division with the state DEC, defended recent cruise ship wastewater legislation during the regular Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce lunch. The new legislation passed this year, known as HB 80, eased a number of regulations on when, where, and under what conditions those ships could dump that water in Alaska's ocean. Hale posed four questions at the beginning of her talk to the chamber, hoping to address fears raised by the legislation. 1. Will copper in cruise ship wastewater harm salmon's natural sense of smell and their ability to navigate to spawning creeks? 2. Will the new legislation roll back previous environmental protections? 3. Is raw sewage being dumped into Alaska waters? And 4. Will fishing be affected in those areas around cruise ship wastewater dumps? The DEC representative systematically addressed each question. She cites studies that show while salmon's olfactories, in other words, noses, are affected by copper, the amount in cruise ship wastewater is not enough to do so. Hale told the chamber that HB 80's deregulation does not affect critical legislation passed in the early 2000s designed to protect Alaska waters. She says that changing those laws would require a different legislative process. That earlier legislation, she notes in addressing the raw sewage question, prevents ships from dumping toxic material into the water.
So the discharge from advanced wastewater treatment systems is a clear liquid. It's basically water. There's nothing, I mean, it's very little in it. A little bit of metals, a little bit of ammonia. I mean, any of the treatment systems in Southeast Alaska, the wastewater on ship is treated to a higher level, significantly higher level.
In addressing concerns over how fishing might be affected, Hale says the almost immediate dilution of wastewater in the ocean minimizes its effect on aquatic life. House Bill 80 was highly controversial when passed earlier this year, and concerns over the deregulations on wastewater dumping have not necessarily gone away with time. James Sullivan is the legislative organizer of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council in Juneau.
The Parnell administration and this legislature, they'll be the first administration to lower water quality standards since Alaska became a state. If anything, we should be working very hard to improve the water quality.
Even more, Sullivan says, DEC is hurting efforts to build on improvements already made by the cruise ship industry.
We want to say, you know, we acknowledge that the cruise industry made great improvements in the last decade. But those improvements came because the people of Alaska forced the industry to improve. What DEC has done is made it easier for the industry to say, we can stop, we're good enough, we don't have to continue to improve.
Hale also fielded a number of questions unrelated to this year's legislation, such as mining prospects on Prince of Wales Island, at Wednesday's chamber lunch. She says DEC is paying attention to new mining ventures on POW and how wastewater from those projects might affect seas in Southeast. Hale answered another question regarding potential radioactive contamination in water from Japan in the wake of the 2011 Fukushima nuclear disaster. Hale says DEC has not conducted an extensive review of seawater that might contain radioactivity, but her agency is monitoring any developments. In Ketchikan, I'm Sean Carlson.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Special thanks to Sean Carlson and Robert Woolsey for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.